My apologies for the lateness. Let's start. We have a very interesting set of adventures ahead of us. So we are about to learn. The goal for this evening is to learn essentially the first half or most of Perek Gimel in Shmuel Beis. So the topic or the context of this Perek is that fighting is broken out between the kingdom of Binyamin and the rest of Israel versus David's kingdom in the south. Reigning as the king over all of Israel is a person by the name of Ish-bosheth, who is the son of Shaul HaMelech, the incumbent, so to speak, upon the throne. And ruling in the south is David HaMelech over his own heritage, his own tribal heritage, which is Yehuda. That's our general context. What we're going to see this evening is how that the power grab spreads further, and how it relates to the marriages in an interesting way here. So let's start at the very beginning. What we're going to do is, again, we're going to be using the text, which is the text section, which is this, which looks like this table with all the psukim, and then we're going to go in sections and look at various ideas. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to start off at the beginning of Perek Gimel five psukim. So this is on page 4 of 9. Perek Gimel, we're going to move from Aleph to Hey, where that little paragraph marker is. So here's what we have. V'atihi ha-melchama aruka bein beis Shaul bein beis David, v'David holech v'chazek u'beis Shaul holchim v'dalim. So the war is long, as wars tend to be. They're always very exciting at the beginning and always very terrible at the end. And it carries on between David and Ish-bosheth. But in the meantime, David Melech has children. His firstborn is Amnon, who's to his wife Achinoam. Umishnehu, his second one is Kilav, Lavigail, Eshes Navala Carmeli. Those are the two wives we've already met. And finally, Vashlishi, Avshalom ben Maacha, ben Talmai, ben Melech Gashur. So he has a third son, Avshalom, Varvii Adonia ben Chages, Achamishi Shefatayu ben Avital. So he has a number of children. Essentially, from six wives, he has each, though we recorded, probably the oldest boy. That's probably what we're hearing about. Why is it necessary? Why do you think that Tanakh finds it necessary to tell us about this, right at this juncture in history? Why is it necessary to hear about this?
To establish his lineage.
So to establish David Melech's lineage. So why is that relevant? Why is that important? Remember, right now we're in a struggle for who's going to be the ultimate controller and power in the region. So one of the hallmarks of a king, at least in these days, is having a lot of children, right? So it's almost like Tanakh is saying that David HaMelech is setting himself up to be a king, right? So he's setting himself up. He's no longer an individual. He's establishing a dynasty. It's interesting that if you look at these names, a lot of these names are going to be problematic names in the future. This is going to serve as a reference point for many of the revolutions against David from his own children. So we know the name Avshalom is here, the name Adoniah. Those are two rebellions against David HaMelech. We're going to have to see how this is Amnon, very unpleasant stories. There's a lot over here that this references. But at this point in time, it's innocuous, but it's really setting the stage for the fact that David HaMelech is silently, while everybody else is fighting, David HaMelech is not taking an active role. But in the meantime, his family is growing, right? In a we'll call it a monarch-like fashion. That's what Tanakh seems to be just noting silently. So David HaMelech is not taking an active role in trying to get power, but in the meantime, slowly he does gain power. Now, that aside, we have a very strange incident which occurs. Very strange incident. This incident runs from Sukkim Vav to, we're going to stop at Yud Aleph. Okay, so this is a very unusual episode in Tanakh. We are told the following. V'ahi b'yosa melchama bein beis Shaul bein beis David. So while there's a war between the house of David and the house of Shaul, v'avner hoya mischazek beis Shaul. Avner, who is the general of Shaul's army, and therefore Ish-bosheth's army, he is obviously the powerhouse, is slowly increasing in his own power in the house of Binyamin, in the house of Shaul. Ulu Shaul Pilegesh Ushmoritz Babas Aya, and Shaul had a concubine, always a very complicated word to define, but some sort of marital relationship was held between Shaul and this woman whose name was Rizpah. Vayomer el Avner, Madua Basa el Pilegesh Avi. And he said, why did you have a relationship with this lady, Rizpah, who was married to my father? Who's speaking? Well, that's interesting. There's no subject to the sentence, right? The Tanakh doesn't tell us who's speaking, but we can only imagine it must be. It must be Ishbosheth, the son of Shaul. But it's interesting that Tanakh, so to speak, quells his name, right? The Tanakh sort of silences his name. It's almost as if maybe what the Tanakh is saying, it's almost as if he doesn't have really the strength to really, he doesn't have the voice to even say who he is, right? Sort of, this accusation is thrown at Avner. Okay. Vayichar le'Avner me'od al divrei Ishbosheth. And he got very angry about this accusation. Vayomer harosh kelev anochi asher liyuda. Am I the head of a dog that belongs to Yehuda? Hayom e'ese chesed in beis Shaul avicha. El echo ve'el mere'ehu ve'loi himtzischa be'yad David v'tikod alai avon ha'isha hayom. So he says, to translate, I show you kindness into the house of your father, and I've not received you, I mean, I've not brought you into the hands of David, and now you make these accusations against me about infidelity as it relates to your father's wife. Like, how could you possibly make such allegations?
Your father's wife.
Right, so the Pilegesh, or we're just going to call concubine wife, some sort of relationship, it's important to know that in general, the practice in these times is that anybody who is married to the king can never marry somebody else afterwards, right? So this over here is seen as almost an infringement on the legacy of Shaul HaMelech, that Avner should have the gall to have any relationship with Rizpah. That seems to be the issue. So before going a little further, I want to see his continuation, because he's actually on a tirade right now. And Avner continues to say, "Koyase Elokim laAvner v'koyasif loy." So should he do? So should God do for you, Avner? And continue, "Ki kasher nishba Hashem laDavid ki chayne ase loy." As Hashem swore to David, I won't do to him laAvir. I'm amlocham ibeis Shaul laLakim es kisei David al Yisrael al Yudami don vaAl Beersheva. He says, you know, I'm completely capable to simply shift my allegiances and support your enemy David, and therefore give him an entire kingdom from north to south. And so the king keeps quiet, right? The king is in a certain sense under the thumb of the military control, which is Avner. He has no right, he has no ability to be able to pursue this allegation. Dina, what were your thoughts? Very weak. Exactly. 100%. Yeah. So you're seeing Tanakh, even in the linguistics, you know, Ishbosheth is being squashed here. He doesn't have a powerful voice. He's not given a voice, and that's to show you the demonstrative, you know, figure of Avner and the power that he wields. One thing which is worthwhile noticing, just in terms of like media and reading news outlets over here, is did this event actually happen? Did it happen? We don't know. We have an accusation. Just it's important to remember, when we see pictures online, of children running in the streets in Gaza City, it's an accusation. But we need verification first, right? So just it's important to remember that this is an accusation. Tanakh actually isn't telling us whether yes or no. Tanakh is just giving us the words of Ishbosheth. That's just something to bear in mind. The Tanakh is not the narrator of what happened. It gives the Ishbosheth the accusation. That's something worthwhile noticing, first of all, is whose voice is speaking. And whether it happened or not could actually affect the tone of Avner's voice. Meaning, was he defensive because he's guilty, or was he flabbergasted because of such an accusation? Right, so we could go either way in terms of what really is going on. But let's dig a little, hold the question for just a moment. Let's just dig this deeper right now. So do you think that Avner over here is just threatening? Meaning to say, when he turns to his master, so to speak, and he says to him, I swear I'm going to go and return the kingdom to David. Is this a threat? Is he trying to just give? Is he just trying to create power, or is this real? What do you think? It's real. So, how do you know? It's real.
That he is the messenger of God.
Right, so he feels very clearly that he is the messenger of God in this. But if let's just appreciate this for a second. Before even reading further, how do we know that he's really serious as he's saying this? Because he actually does this in a form of a shvua, as an oath. He's not simply threatening, blackmailing. He says, I swear that this is going to be what's happening. In fact, the Metzudas David points out, if we were to take a look, we're going to start a little bit on this in the source sheets, which is on page 7 over here, where he says, the Masura says, Ko yaase, in source 18, Ko yaase hu inyan shvua, the kahena harbe b'mikra. He says, there are many oaths that are put as formulated as Ko yaase. He says, Kaasher nishva Hashem l'amnichoy al kol Yisrael, e'ese lo l'David l'sa'ayoy al devarim lucha. As God swore to David to put him on the throne, I will support him. This is not just a threat, this is a commitment that he is making, which is terrifying, which is why Ish-bosheth, realizing that his only power is the person who put him on the throne, which is his general, therefore he is now in a very precarious and compromised situation. Let's understand this. Let's for argument's sake say that this did happen. Let's say the accusation is correct, and that Avner and Rizpah had a relationship, right? So this is certainly an infringement in terms of kingly honor. But what's going on? What's going on between the two of them? Like, is this the first time we meet this lady called Rizpah? So it's the first time we meet her, but it's not the last time we meet her. It's interesting to follow this through Tanakh. We need to understand who she is. She's a very powerful person too. So let's understand what happens. What we're going to do is we're going to fast forward to the end of Sefer Shmuel Beis in Perek Chaf Aleph, and take a look at this next event which is recorded. This is the very bottom, it's on the top of the next page, the top of page 8. Here is the story that goes on. What the context for the story is the following. So here's the context for this. What happens is there's this terrible drought in the land of Israel. And David HaMelech does not know what's happening. It's towards the end of his rule. He can't make head or tail of it. So what does he do? He asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, the reason is because of what Shaul HaMelech did to the Givonim. The Givonim are this non-Jewish tribe who have sworn allegiance with Israel. They're under Israel's protectorate. And they're living in their midst. But here's the interesting thing, is that they're never really quite, they're a dishonest bunch of people. They live in Israel, and we see there's many dishonest people come out of their nation throughout history. But they have a real debt to settle with Shaul HaMelech, where the Shaul HaMelech at some point in time massacred some of them, misused them, cut down their job supply. There's a number of options as to what Shaul HaMelech did. Nonetheless, Shaul HaMelech is considered guilty for having misused them. So Hashem says, it's because of this. That's why the drought's coming at this point in time. Very strange. It's very much later. It's not when Shaul's around. So he goes and he consults them. And he asks them, what are their demands? How could we settle this spiritual debt, so to speak? And their demand is hand over the children of Shaul HaMelech as revenge for what he did to us and to our children. That's what the Givonim say. Very cruel people. And David HaMelech asks, and he is given permission, and that's what happens. So let's take a look over here. In source 9, we're going to start from the second pasuk, Beis Chof Aleph Zayin. That's Shmuel Beis, Perek Chof Aleph Zayin. It says, the first line, V'yachmon HaMelech al mefi boshes ben Yonatan ben Shaul, v'al shvuas Hashem asher benihem, ben David ben Yonatan ben Shaul. So he has mercy on mefi boshes, who's Yonatan's son, not to hand him over. However, Yikach HaMelech Eshnei B'nei Ritzpah, Basaya Asher Yodol Shaul. But he does take the two children of Ritzpah, who are the sons of Shaul. So this is our Ritzpah here. This is the same woman. Es Armoni Ve'es Mephibosheth, Ve'es Chameshes B'nei Michal Bas Shaul, and the five children of Michal, the daughter of Shaul. Interesting. Right, so whose children are they? We have to think about that. Asher Yoldola Adriel ben Barzilai Mecholati. Okay? We have to think, where is that relationship? Is this the same Michal? Vayitneim biyad givonim vayoyki bahar lifnei Hashem. They hang them. They hang the children of Shaul HaMelech. In revenge, vayiplu shvatam yachad vehema humsu bimei ketzir barishonim betchilas ketzir sorim. They're killed at the beginning of the barley season. However, vatikach ritzpa bas aya es asak vatateu la es atzur mitchilas ketzir anitach maim aleihem min hashamayim. So she stood there by their corpses hanging up, and she stood there with a sack and a stone. And she protected them from the carrion seeking animals, from the animals in the day and the birds at night. And he goes and he buries the bodies of the children of Shaul. Very terrible story on many accounts. Very terrible story. In fact, the Gemara says that one of the characteristic hallmarks of a Jewish person is to have deeply ingrained some sort of rachmanos, a deep sense of mercy. And it's clear from this treatment what they did. That they cannot be. This sort of the DNA does not match to be Jewish. That could do something like this. David Melech seems to be was forced to facilitate in this respect. He asked Hashem about this terrible situation. But who is Rizpah? Rizpah is a very strong person. Rizpah loses her children. She stands out there for months. We talk about the entire season. We're talking about probably from March time all the way through to June, July, and she stays there day and night to protect the bodies of her children. And the other children of Shaul HaMelech. Rizpah is a person who this is not just motherly love. This is also about the legacy of who she represents. She is a link in the chain to the legacy of Shaul HaMelech, and she will protect that at all costs. Avner has clearly noticed that. Avner is a person who wanted to reestablish the monarchy of Shaul HaMelech. He was the uncle of Shaul HaMelech. He essentially was the one who started, if you remember way, way back, when Shaul HaMelech is originally initiated as a king, he comes back and innocently returns to his hometown. Nobody knows what's going on. And it says that one of his uncles came over to him and said, Shaul, what happened? He says, oh, I was just finding the donkeys. Well, what uncle do you know about in Tanakh? He has. Well, that uncle is Avner. Avner is already suspicious. He knows something's up. He's the first person who smells that Shaul is going to be king. He's the one ultimately who saw lies to Shaul HaMelech to try to keep him from making peace with David HaMelech. Avner is the most zealous person on the behalf of the kingdom of Binyamin. When he puts up somebody on the stage and that person isn't doing his job, that Ish-boshes is too passive for the likelihood of the person who supports Binyamin. What is he doing? In a certain sense, he's trying to rekindle the power of Shaul HaMelech. If it ain't coming from Ish-boshes, let's find another channel. We're going to take a very powerful wife of Shaul HaMelech, and let's try to rekindle that legacy in another direction. That's what seems to be going on here, which is, in a certain sense, on the one hand, the greatest loyalty and the greatest treachery at the same time. Meaning he is undermining the legacy of Shaul to uphold the legacy of Shaul HaMelech, which is what Ish-boshes exactly is calling foul to. You have no right. And what does Avner say? Avner says, I'm too powerful for you to play games with me. You can't, don't intercede with my power play here. Dina.
But I'm under the impression that he wanted to become king, and that's why he took...
Very possible. It could be either himself... or from the family, whichever way. Meaning it could be himself, or it could be the seed, that maybe he will be able to reestablish the seed of the monarchy of Shaul through this. Either way, this is a reaching for power. She represents power. Yes?
Rabbi, I need an explanation, because I'm not understanding something.
Yep.
Rizpah is married to Shaul.
She was. But he was killed at battle, so she's now husbandless.
Okay, she's husbandless. And
Avner, Ish-boshes.
So he is the son of
another wife of Shaul HaMelech. Correct.
And he is accusing Avner of having
infidelity with his essentially his stepmother, if you want to say it. or one of...
Do we know if it's true? Or
we don't. Tanakh does not lend us ears about this. But we can only imagine over here that there is reason to believe that there's a reason for that Avner would go in this direction. That's all we're seeing. In fact, just to develop this further, there's a beautiful book called Oz Melech, which is written by Rav Yigal Ariel on Tanakh. A number of he writes on most of the Nevi'im Rishonim. Excellent, really excellent work. And here's what he says in Hebrew, in his Hebrew work in source 12, on page 149 about this. I wanted just to go from the second paragraph, and he points out that there are two individuals we're going to watch through Sefer Shmuel Beis who are too powerful for their seats. They're the colleagues of one another. Avner is Shaul's general, and Yoav is David's general, and they're going to be too powerful. They're going to be too loyal to the self-negation. He goes on to says, Nireh li, ha-malchus b'miuchad b'shas yitzirasa, zekuka l'koach shekazeh. When a kingdom is being established, you need to have a forceful person like this. He benuya al ne'emanut v'tzaitanut. It's built on absolute 100% loyalty. In this on source 12, I'm sorry, on page 11. While shibud akol koichos l'uma l'malko, and all forces being absolutely adherent to its kingdom. This is the second paragraph in source 12. In the bolded section, kol ish asher yamre es picha v'leishma. I'm sorry, I've got a different numbers in these suits. I'm so sorry. I'm using a different set of sources. Anyone who will go against your mouth will be gulakol asher tetzave yumas rak chazak ve'ematz. Anybody who goes against you will be slain. Ah, hatafkid shimilei Yoav etzel David b'hakamat malchuto ladorot milei Avner etzel Shaul. The role which Yoav was to David, as his vehement general, was what Avner filled for Shaul. Ein ze hishtabdut leish ela lerayon. He was not subjugated to a person. Avner was not subjugated to the king. He was subjugated to an ideal. The ideal hamamale et kol ruchoy shel adam, which completely consumes him. Which means that therefore, if it means sacrificing the person for the ideal, that will happen. Brilliant. He's not serving Ishbosheth. He's not even serving Shaul. He's serving the notion of monarchy of Binyamin. The same way Yoav is not serving David. He's serving the monarchy of the king of the house of Yehuda. And that sometimes is dangerous. Yes, Alicia.
Why wouldn't he just try to establish one of Shaul's other sons as a king instead of...
Good question. I think they're dead right now. Meaning Shaul HaMelech lost most of his children at battle. It sounds like Ishbosheth was the only option that was left. That's what it sounds like. We know that he is a Mephibosheth, but he is a grandson. And Mephibosheth was handicapped. It sounds like this is the only option he has, and Avner is making a last-ditch effort. Let's put him on the stage. It seems he's too passive for Avner's liking, which is why he wants to even grab the power himself. Yeah, but that's a good question. You're right. I'm not sure. It might be that this is because she's a Pilegesh. That might be one step out of order. Not clear. Not clear. You have an excellent point. Good call. As we see later on. Anyway, so this is what we see over here. Now, let's put this episode on hold for a second, and let's return to the mirror opposite that happens over here on the David side. So here we've seen a grab of power through, so to speak, the marriage or relationship to Ritzpah and Avner. Now on the other side we see it happen. So what does Avner do? Avner means business. Avner is not a person to be messed with, as Asael learned last time, right? So Avner is not a person to bargain with. So what actually happens? So let's focus on the last section for today, which is Psukim Yud Beis, all the way to Chaf Aleph. Let's just quickly go through the Psukim and then consider a few questions. So here we go. Vayishlach Avner malachim el David, tachtav lemor lemi eretz. Leimor karsa brischa itcha iti vihine yodi imcha la save elecha as kol Yisrael. So he says, who owns all the land? Meaning God. God is going to give the land to you. So Avner is essentially betraying his loyalties to go and say, I will serve David now. Vayomer tovani echros itcha bris. He said, okay, I'll make you a covenant, says David. Ach davar echad anachi shalme itcha leimor. I'm asking you one thing. Lo yisire es ponai. You're not going to even have an audience with me. You need to send me Michal, my rightfully wedded wife, before you even make an appearance. So David sends a demand to the king Ishbosheth, and he says, "Tana is ishti es nichal asher astili b'me'ar arlos plishtim. Give me my wife that I betrothed to me." Remember, Shaul HaMelech had this terrible request to have 100 foreskins of Philistines, right? So he actually killed 200 of them at the time that he married Michal. So he says, "This is my marriage; it was taken away from me. She needs to come back before anything happens." So he actually goes, and at this point in time, she's married to a person by the name of Paltiel ben Laish. So he extracts her from that marriage. And her husband, Paltiel, or Palti, follows her crying to the area of Bachurim. Go back. So Vayeshev, and he returned. Vayeshev, and he returned. And then Avner arrives. After delivering upon the promise, he goes to the Ziknei Yisrael. Gam Tamal Gal Shushom Yisam Avakshem Es David LeMelech Aleichem. He turns to the elders and he says, "You know, really, I know deep down that all of you really wanted David Amelech. You really wanted to support him. V'ato asu, now's the time to do it. Ki Hashem amar el David leimor, v'yad David avdi hoshir es ami Yisrael miyad plishtim miyad kol aveim. Now is the time to anoint David as the full king over all of Israel. V'adaber gam avner ba'oznei binyamin, v'elech gam avner levedaber ba'oznei David b'chevron, es kol asher ha'tov b'enei Yisrael v'enei kol b'enei binyamin." So he starts now spreading the rumors, starting speaking to the chieftains and the governors and the mayors and everybody else in the north, and he now starts making his way down south to Chevron, where David is. And they make this fabulous stay. They make this fabulous feast. David hosts Avner, the general, so to speak, of his enemy, and it seems like things are all going to come together. If you so will it, I will go out and I will gather all of Israel together. It will make a covenant. You will be the king. And everything you want, and he goes in peace, and that's the end of Sefer Shmuel Beis, and everybody lives happily ever after. But that's not exactly what happens, unfortunately. A few things happen in between. Nonetheless, let's try to appreciate what's going on over here. Avner wants to make peace with David HaMelech. So Mephibosheth doesn't seem to be a player at this point in time, and certainly remember he's a grandson. Yeah, so at this point in time, you see, first of all, Avner is making true on his threat, but also he's acting as the king, meaning he is doing the negotiations as if he's the State Department, right? So sort of completely overturning any action on Ishbosheth's side. Let's just appreciate a few things here quickly. First of all, Michal, what's the whole story here? Meaning, what happens? She was married to David HaMelech, right? The last time he saw her was as he was climbing out of the window in her house as the guards were knocking on the front door. So she saved his life, and that's how David HaMelech was saved, right? So she's luring out the back window. She puts, like, you know, this mannequin in bed to protect him so that he seems like he's sick so that he has time to escape. That's the last time he's seen Michal. What does Shaul do in revenge? Shaul remarries her to this gentleman called Paltiel ben Laish. Hang on for 1 second. So she remarries to Paltiel ben Laish. And now David HaMelech says, time to make things right again. Just complicated issues over here. Halachically speaking, that one is not allowed to remarry in such an instance. So the question is how does that work? So the Gemara tells us in a very interesting thing. The Gemara tells us, just to skip to this for a moment, the Gemara tells us in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, here we are. In source 15, I'm not going to use the real sources this time, sorry. Source 25, okay, I'm 10 behind in this other version. Ksiv, the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin, Palti uksiv Paltiel. He was called Palti and he was called Paltiel. That wasn't just a nickname. Amar Rav Yochanan, Palti Shmoy, his name really was Palti. V'lamot Nikra Shmo Paltiel. Why was he given an extra sort of Aleph Lamed at the end of his name? Shepaltu el kel min ha'avera. That Hashem gave him the strength to resist an avera. Ma'asa na'atz cherev beino leveino. Amar kol ha'isek bedavar ze yedaker becherev ze. So when he and Michal were forced to get married, what he did was he took a sword and he drove it into the middle of the bed between them, And he said that although the king has forced us to get married, there will be no consummation of this marriage. This is not going to be a real marriage. That's what Palti ben Laish said, which means that ultimately he was loyal to and she was loyal to David, even though the king had, so to speak, reappropriated their marriage, which is shocking. In fact, the Gemara goes on to say that it's all right. We always talk about Yosef HaTzadik as being an incredible person who was able to overcome his indulgences in the house of Potiphar. And the Gemara says that was nothing. That was child's play compared to Palti ben Laish, because here he was. The king says, get married. And it wasn't a one-night stand. This is the entire life living together. But he knows that he's not meant to be married with her, and she knows she's not meant to be married with him. So this is a remarkable sense of sacrifice on both of their sides, which is what, by the way, when David HaMelech calls for Michal again and asks to be remarried to Michal, the Gemara says, a number of the Mephoshim suggest, that it could only be based on a prophecy that David HaMelech had any inkling to know that, in fact, she wasn't really married to somebody. It wasn't a real marriage to be able to get married. This is just in terms of the background over here, which just gives another... In terms of loyalty, the loyalty of both of those people is hard to even imagine. But what you see here is an interesting thing. Why is David HaMelech asking for Michal? Why is that the bargaining chip over here? Avner wants to make peace. Why is it that she is the way that he wants in? What do you think? Okay, so if David HaMelech is going to be the accepted king over all of Israel, he needs legitimacy in the eyes specifically of the hotbed, the hive of the other side. Who's the other side? Shaul's family. Michal is the daughter of Shaul. He's marrying the princess again. By getting into the royal family again, he has now legitimized his kingship unilaterally, just to understand what David HaMelech is doing. So so to speak, what Avner was doing illegitimately, David HaMelech is doing legitimately, which is, I was first married to Michal before anybody else, right? That was it. That was what the king promised, and I was married to Michal. We're going to start that again because we're starting again. This is going to be the united kingship. David HaMelech is very, very clever over here. Another aspect of this, says the Malbim, just to understand the brilliance of David HaMelech is, if your enemy's general reaches out to you and says, let's have a meeting, right? So you have no idea what the relationship between that general and his king is, right? If he comes in as a meeting for you, you could find him arriving in a box, right? Cut up into pieces because, he disobeyed the king, right? So what does David HaMelech do? He creates a pretext. He says, you know what? How about this? I'm going to send a message to Ish-bosheth like I do. I'm going to ask, it's been a while. It's an unfair decree what Shaul did to me and to Michal. Let's try to fix this up. And then you're going to say, Ish-bosheth, if you want me to sacrifice myself by, escorting Michal down south to Hebron, I will do that. Now there's a pretext and context for that meeting. Now David HaMelech and Avner can meet safely. Right, so do you see what David HaMelech is also doing? Mom says, to be able to facilitate this. So on both levels, what David HaMelech does. By the way, you just see the brilliance. David HaMelech has never militarily tried to vanquish Ish-bosheth. He's never overridden him. He's never tried to assassinate him. There are people who are doing all this for him all the time, as we're going to see. But David HaMelech never does this. David HaMelech only requests, really, ultimately, what is really... this is his marriage, which has been broken, right? That's really all he's doing, but it is such a very, very clever way of doing things as well at the same time. So you're seeing the double power play.